This call is being recorded.
Okay, shall we start with the first point of our today's call agenda?
Yeah.
Okay, so it is related to finalize manager's block pull request 195. I think this was approved by me, also by Angelo. I think this looks good to me. I do not have anything else to add.
Yep, I was hoping this would be quick.
Yep, probably that's why it's the first one.
Indeed.
Okay, yes. Didi, press the button.
Yeah, so here's the thing. You're probably the only one who can actually do it.
Okay, no problem. Then. Ta-da!
Cool. So now we have... I guess we have a number of issues closed. Wonder if this will shake some trees. I wonder if there's going to be any people.
I hope so.
Because it actually closes a bunch of very old issues. So a lot of unsuspecting victims may now be getting the notifications.
Collateral damage. No, I hope some people will get back to discussions on our GitHub, so it's good. But actually, this was our intention, mine and Tomasz, to close as much as possible of the outstanding, especially legacy issues. So I'm fine with this. We'll see.
Hello.
Okay. Oh, hi, Sebastian.
Hi, sorry about the delay.
No problem. Did you join on IRC, Sebastian?
Sorry. Yes, I'm on my way.
Okay. So I believe we can proceed on to the second point of our today's agenda. Discuss cookbook pull request number nine. Channel number five. Okay, so
I guess I had some comments on this one.
Yes, indeed, because for me, I think we can proceed as it is now. As I wrote, I have no issues with describing same matters multiple times, as long as whatever is written is consistent across cookbooks. So.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I saw what Angela replied also. I was just a remark that maybe all of the others, which are currently drafts, they pretty much are drafts. I mean, I would like them to finally disappear and either be made into actual pages or maybe molded into something a little else. Now, regarding the other comments, Angela, I suppose you addressed all of them, and I see outdated.
Yeah, I addressed everything but the duplication topic, which I replied to just as you've seen.
Yes.
But everything else should be fixed.
Very well, very well. I don't really want to stall here. Like I say, I think this should be fine now.
Indeed. For now, I think it's enough. We can amend it in the future if something new pops out.
Okay.
Oh, what was that?
Sorry, that's me having a very long day and hitting the vino. I do apologize.
Okay. Okay, don't worry. I'm going to be here, so...
Although, hold on. I may have just one technical note on this one, because I see that, Angela, you added the hint. The hint thing.
Yes.
But now, without actually adding it to... the project itself? No, it actually works.
No, the Hinge plugin has already been installed before that.
Oh, right. I didn't think we used those hints anywhere.
We didn't use them, but the plugin was still in the plugin JSON. So I could use it.
Fine. Very well. Okay, good. In which case, I am happy to approve. Let me click that for... completeness. Oh, and actually, I can merge. So if you guys think we're good, maybe you want to vote. I don't know.
Just one question: how did you preview the file with these hints enabled? Because I've just browsed the file from the pull request, and I just all I can see is raw hint constructs.
Visible. In the summary, you have checks. One of them is deploy preview. When you click the details, it actually opens the pull request deployed. Oh. So the pull requested code as it's in its state.
Cool, didn't know that. I just started it locally to test.
I see.
Where is it again? I can't see it.
Can I give it a link? No, there's no
link. I posted the link to the in the IRC. Yeah. You just have to press the details on the last check.
Details on the last check where it says deploy preview ready. So on the very bottom. So this is where you typically get CI stuff like Travis and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I also wanted on the minutes and the other the main. Website.
The spec would be great on the spec.
It would, but just keeps coming back to we don't have access to the repository. So unless we fork that, whatever, do something with it. But this one we can actually deploy from the pull requested branches. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Is number 9 ready to be merged? I can see Tomaszak's approved this one. I can see all checks are okay, so squash and merge. Okay. Then. Cool. I think we can proceed to number 3 of today's agenda. Revisit property supported operations design issue number 196. I'm just wondering how we can improve the situation.
I believe that's an additional paragraph added
to the spec, maybe.
I mean, but this is, I'm afraid it's a bit more complicated than that, because even though we agree that maybe what Angelo and you, Carol, where it says correct syntax would be. But I'm pretty sure that most people would actually have, especially looking at the original example, most people would probably be already doing the...
Where did you find this original example? Is it on this Marcus Hydro Event Advocap?
Yeah, there is. Really? Unfortunately, yes. Okay, let's see. API demo vocab.
Context.
So if you open, I can link to this on.
No, it's not true. It's.
It is true. Property. The very
supported property, for instance, and there is a property pointing to some IRI, and there is a Hydra title, Hydra description, required, write only, read only. Everything is attached to.
No. Not at all. You have to look at the property vocab entry point, my account, for example. That's just find my account property.
Can you provide a link or something?
I linked to the VOCAP itself.
Yeah, so I can see it.
Find this.
My account.
And actually, there are all of them actually, entry point issues. All of them have property, which is a Hydra link, and then the supported operation underneath.
Yes, I can see that.
Which is correct in the sense of the spec, because the supported operation could be placed on a Hydra link, which this is.
Yeah, but I don't think it was the intention, because if you take a look at the beginning, API documentation, for instance, these properties are applied on the supported property rather than on property itself.
Which one, for example? What ID?
For instance, the very first supported class, Hydra Core Collection. It has supported property at index 0, 0. There is a property member. It has a title, description, required, read only, write only.
The supported operation is an empty array, and it's on the class and not on a property.
Yeah, our implementation has supported operation only on class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose that this is the more common. I know it's actually kind of hard to really understand what the supported operation under property should, how to actually use it.
Imagine a situation when you have a resource, for instance, of type person, and this resource has a property knows. You could easily attach a supported operation to property knows just to operate on this very property. Because knows property is also a collection, so you can, for instance, add new people to this relation.
No, I'm fine. I'm
It saves you the extra request to go to the property to discover the operation and then figure out what.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying I agreed. And so it does open some possibilities for me. It usually would have been some kind of let's call it apps, a way for polymorphism in a way, because you don't have to. You may have objects or resources of different types attached to a property, and it also may or may not simplify. I don't want to discuss that, but I just meant that probably it's less common to design that way. So because it's not as straightforward, but. Yeah, I mean, I based my implementations on this structure, but it now we
on agree which structure?
Maybe, well, where you have the property and
the property operation. Property has supported operations.
Mm-hmm. Instead
okay.
of
okay, this is interesting because I personally, by the way, my thoughts never. Were never directed in this scheme. I always applied these properties, this like required read only, write only to supported property rather than the property itself. Right. From what I can see on this Marcus's example, it looks like the very last resource, which is an entry point, seems to be broken. I don't know. Because I'm reviewing other resources, and it seems that all other resources are not modifying the property itself.
I don't follow.
In this Marcus's example, there are 6 supported classes, and the very last has the properties modified with additional attributes rather than supported property itself. I don't know, maybe the very last supported class, which is vocab entry point, was maybe added later, I don't know. And by mistake, it uses this approach with properties having supported operations.
Well, there was one on vocab comment slash user.
Now all of them are the same.
Yeah. All supported properties contain a property which contain supported operation. But I don't see any supported property containing supported operation directly.
No, this example with vocab user.
Vocab user.
Yes. So supported property user slash name. Of course, okay, it has supported operation, but it is empty array. And other attributes like required, read only, write only are on the supported property itself.
Yeah, but not the supported property, this is the supported operation.
Mm-hmm.
Supported operation is always within property. I don't find a single example where supported operation is on the same level as required read only and write only.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, is this the intended use? If not, what is the intended use and how could we clarify this? And will that break existing implementations?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm pretty sure that this is the intended use. I mean, as originally designed by Marcus. But and notice that all of those properties which have any operation, they are defined locally within this API. So all of them are within vocab namespace. None of them reuse third-party vocabularies. And this is where this is where all of this began. Saying that okay, so instead. Hard to actually fit it into this because it does not actually reuse existing any existing properties as far as I can tell. But if we wanted to do both nodes or I don't know something of schema, and then we start adding those operations.
Well, I'm looking at schema.org here, and I don't see any. I'm just looking at trade action, for example. I don't see applying to any property, just classes.
You should trade action.
Maybe other way. What harm can do adding supported properties to properties defined in shared vocabularies?
I don't see any issues with it, but you have to reify this stuff in the sense that I think the use case you were talking about at some point was what happens if you have an aggregator because you kind of pollute the property with, you know, I can add a buy action to a schema.org buy action on a schema.org property without it being schema.org defined. And the thing at that point is you're extending that model with this stuff. But my understanding, and again, you know, I'm as newbie as can be on this stuff, but any aggregator would have to say, and I imagine just for UX for this, right? But you have the definition of the property, and then you would have the definition of the supported operations per API declaring it. Because you have to verify this stuff, because any operation that you define on a property that's defined externally is only valid on a specific API. You just can't trust those defined operations unless they come from schema.org itself.
I mean,
does that make sense? But I don't think there's any issue with it, but you have to verify it for it to be understandable.
So maybe this is the step we want to need. We should just clarify that whatever one may find in the API documentation, it's inherently trust is maybe not the right word, but like you said, it's only valid within the scope of any given API and even actually a given request, because we discussed that. I mean, the API documentation is by no means static. So if you log in, your API documentation will change. It's actually a runtime construct. And as the same thing that applies to supported operation does apply to domains and ranges. Like we discussed also, if we want to reuse anything from schema, is schema a good example? Why do I only see classes? How do I see properties from schema vocabulary?
You go to a type and it has the properties from the inheritance chain.
Correct.
I know it's not an inheritance chain, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Let's see, review. I click review and I get the properties. Something that's more maybe audience, anything like author, which is organization or person. And so if we use schema author as our property and we say that its domain, its range, also its domain. So we have a comment and of our vocab comment type, and then we have the vocab user class, and we want to connect them with schema.org author. If that was to be ingested into a global graph, it's going to pollute the vocabulary just in the same way, because we're making statements about the property. So maybe there is no escaping that, and
maybe the only reasonable solution is, for instance, for the server to provide a named graph.
Well, so one of the implementation goals for our client is to apply same origin policy. So if I navigate to one of the schemas that are defined in the on my API or on a API that is within the domain, I will not allow those operations to be issued if they are asserted by a different server, if that makes sense. So I will only issue a put request if the domain for the put request is the same one as the documentation that I extracted or the supported operations that I would read. And the reason for that is otherwise you would have to whitelist this stuff. Because it's an assertion by a site, so I can only query to that site. That's what we plan on implementing, because I can't trust assertions from someone else to another server. I can't really trust my own server to make assertions about what you can do to another server.
That's a general thing when we merge several data sources from the web. Which one could you trust in which context? We have to keep track of that some way. So it might be an option to trust only the origin to say right things about itself.
And I think you could say that. I mean, one of the implementation details could simply be that you do a head request to get the cross origin policy for that specific server to see if it's accessible for your clients. Because I remember in the one HTTP working group discussion was about this and the fact that browser vendors didn't understand that any other code than browsers would ever need to have a cross origin policy. But I can't let my client wild doing stuff without developers actually knowing about it, because it would be reviewed as a massive security hole, just like it is in a browser. So I would have to vet it based on what the server at the end tells me, or a whitelist, which I would probably do for certain servers, if that makes sense.
I mean, all of this sounds reasonable, and I guess that if we start changing this now, we're just opening a big, big kind of issues.
I think the point I'm making is that I'm perfectly happy to be able to extend types that I don't own on my API. It's an implementation decision from the clients to decide if they trust that or not. And it's doable without being in the spec, if that makes sense. But the spec would just say, you know, if you browse this stuff, be aware that this stuff may only be valid for that specific API and not generally. So if you load up all this stuff, just make sure that you understand the difference between what schema.org defines on the property and what your current API defines on the property. I don't have the use case of the RDF guys, if there is such a thing, but as far as the API developers guys do, and where we compete with GraphQL and with, you know, OpenAPI and et cetera, then they only care about their API. It's a closed world for the most part. And that's the reality, is the majority of the consumers potentially for Hydra, as far as where we've progressed so far, I have a feeling it's the private API guys. It's not the open world guys. And I think, especially when you define classes and you make them automatic, this is the private world stuff. And we're trying to introduce common shared vocabularies. That's the value that I managed to sell to developers. Everything else is beyond the scope of what people would accept, I think.
All right. Basically, looks like we indeed would be catering for just the 20% of the RDF people who actually care about the open world and the semantics of what you use and when, why, and how it impacts the other potential consumers. But do you feel up to at least if you at least make an what you just been saying as a comment under this issue, or maybe and we can then make it into a pull request, or maybe you could start drafting a such clarification section for the spec, and then we could just keep the design as is, but we have to make it really clear that no one should ever trust so whatever the API services, the API documentation as universal truth for multiple reasons.
I'd go with some extra paragraph added to the spec with some clarification, maybe some recommendations, I don't know, for the naming graph or maybe other solutions.
Wouldn't adding supported operations to the supported property be left out of the spec for now? Is that something that we could get away with for now and just review later?
That was my question I wanted to ask. Does the current specification allows that? Because I formally do not see anything that prevents developers to do so.
Is that defined in the original Hydra schema? You know, the one that Marcus did.
Yeah, but supported operation predicate is formally allowed for. I'm just looking at the schema, the picture. It's allowed on the link and on the class. This is an RDF world. There is nothing that prevents me from using supported operation of some kind of resource, elevating it effectively to the, for instance, link. And I have no issues with having a resource of type supported property, also a link.
Well, so of course, this is the only way it does make sense, because if you want to use, I mentioned schema author between two resources, it essentially does become a link. So if you then start adding supported operation to the schema author property, it kind of implies that on the other end you'll have also resources, because you cannot do operations on literals. So a link actually does make sense.
Actually, it's even better because the formal RDF serialization of the vocabulary does not state RDF's domain on the supported operation predicate.
Yeah.
There is only a schema.org domain includes, and this does not apply the RDFS domain semantics. So actually, we can use supported operation virtually on any kind of resource without any limitations.
Yeah, so, that's true. We could use supported supported operation on property as well as on supported property. The spec doesn't prevent that, but is this reasonable? What should we recommend people who want to build an API using Hydra? It's kind of confusing if I have too many possibilities. Yeah. Which one should I use, and which clients will be able to make use of it?
Okay, so I would go with some extra description on all those possibilities. Pros and cons of each other, and let the implementer decide.
So I'm a little bit worried with that, because I do agree with the fact that people get very worried, and from an implementation detail, it's very confusing. If you can do a bunch of stuff, and now I need to explain a lot more concepts to people. So is it possible? Because it's possible according to the RDF definitions, but is it possible that we have, the W3C used to do recommendations on best practices separately from the core specification. And I wonder if, and the HTML working group had two different renderings of the same spec. And I wonder if it wouldn't get us faster to finish the core spec if we had a continuously updated best practices and details separately as a separate document that wouldn't have to be, going through the process of us saying, yeah, this is stable and we're happy with that.
I guess what we are building with the example APIs and the cookbook description is some kind of best practice description. We describe specific use cases there, which might be read as best practice to do so. So we could decide, at some place, we need to decide which example we want to provide in the API details. Do we want to place supported operation on the property or on the supported property? Or both, actually. But this would be, I guess it would be too confusing to have too many possibilities.
I would agree with that. For the first iteration of the spec anyway.
Yeah, I concur with what Angelo said. I would probably keep the details away from the spec, the core spec, as much as possible, and keep it kind of technical, and then promote the cookbook with more in-depth description of what are the possibilities given by Hydra and how to actually deploy the APIs and when to choose the different designs.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, that said, actually, there's the issue 4 right above the illustration, because it actually does give a lot of information with just a glance. Maybe, but probably now I'm digressing a little bit. But if we at least keep that image, the graph updated, but just maybe add a little bit of description of how one should read it.
The image I remember that in one of the pull requests that actually did, it's still pending. I've created a brand new schema image, and I've got all the source required. So it's fully editable and we have full control of it. It's no more a PNG picture.
I mean, the source is somewhere else. I'm just saying, just give some help, some hints on reading that image, and it, because the recurring issue with the spec is that it's probably one of the worst specs out there in its current state. Mm-hmm. And then we cannot really go into too much detail in a spec. This is where the best practices document, such as the cookbook, fills this gap. So regarding what we've been discussing, so the properties, definitely some kind of paragraph saying what one should and should not do and expect, or however you want to phrase it. So do not trust the API documentation unconditionally, and then apply same origin policy and yeah, remember that it's just API specific, really. This probably does fit in a spec. But then also, how do we make it clear that do we also put it in the specs to describe somehow that the support operation is used with the proper the Hydra property, or is it too much for the spec and that this actually belongs to the best practices, where we iterate all of the ways to add supported operations?
Well, either we support it completely and you show both, or we support one and then the rest is you could do this. I mean, I'm not sure that the spec would get as much buy-in if we start putting all the coulds, because we're in an open world graph. I'm just really concerned from the API dev perspective that if I say you should put this there, but you could put this there, then suddenly I give two options and the spec needs to have a large amount of explanations of various possibilities, which is fine, but then we really need to support both scenarios all the way, because
yeah, I wouldn't even say it explicitly. If someone wants to read between the lines and decide that, ooh, I'm looking at the vocabulary and I determine that supported operation can go anywhere, yeah, go ahead and do it. But the generic client and the libraries will not really support it. You have to implement it yourself. And yeah, I wouldn't even mention that explicitly in the spec.
Yeah,
I would just say, well, we expect. And this is how we intend to use supported operation. Anything else is just your pure invention.
I agree.
Okay. Can we conclude this somehow? Shall we add some paragraph to the spec, or let's leave it as it is now? Shall we extend the cookbook?
Well, we'll get there with the cookbook eventually, so I wouldn't necessarily add any specific. Maybe we can just add some kind of issue on a cookbook, but for the spec, well, Sebastian was saying, the paragraph warning against trusting API documentation, mm-hmm. Yeah, and well. We do have some of those examples. So there is an example 8, defining class and documenting its supported properties. And then it says, example 8 is defining class and documented its supported operations. And then link properties. And somehow the supported operation of properties is missing. I mean, maybe a snippet. Without going into too much details, would make it clear that, okay, this is the way you do it. And then the cookbook will elaborate on when and why you want it. At least if we just add a two-sentence paragraph and just one additional snippet.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe just expand it as feedback comes in, or implementers talk about it, or API developers talk about it. You know, if we get 10, 20 messages about it, then there's value in expanding. If no one ever talks about it, then we did a lot of work for a scenario that wouldn't be a problem for people.
Okay, can we make it an action point?
Yeah, do it.
I Angelo, can you create an action point on this?
Okay, yeah, sorry, I have to just this is action. Okay, I'm for that. Action. So Sebastian, you will do this or cover or
I can add a comment to the GitHub issue. I am worried that I have not the skills to add to the spec yet.
Neither of us has, but okay, leave a comment and maybe I'll try to craft a pull request updating the spec.
Okay, I'll put some time in the calendar next week to do that. Because of the travel to Portland this week, I'm going to be submerged with apparently I've been told that I'm presenting at the conference something, so so I need to prepare that as well.
Sure thing. No worries.
So the action is that the Bastian will add a comment to the issue or where what?
Yeah,
the issue. I'll add a comment to the issue and I'll attempt to do a pull request with the documentation, maybe.
Okay.
But I'll need some help on that. But I'll do a first draft and then you'll tell me that
Yes, exactly. That's what we do. Neither of us has a great experience with writing specs, so no worries.
Cool. Then I'm getting my car, my Tesla, finally on Monday. So Monday is out. So I'll schedule the work for Tuesday afternoon. I'll set 2 hours away, 2 hours to do it. If it's in the calendar, then I can guarantee that I will do the best I can.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
Cool. Can we proceed to the next point of our agenda? Decide on next piece of movies example API.
Yeah, after we now are able to create a new movie, we should be able to list movies, I guess. What do you think?
Sure.
That sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
But before that, I'm going to write the cookbook, to finish the cookbook, because we don't have the movie creation description ready yet.
Yeah, cool. Well, sounds like you have it under control.
It might be that I guess I will have less time in the future, but I try my best to keep this thing moving.
I have a full support for my tech lead to invest time in this, so I'll put more load on my developers, but I can take on some of the load as I get through the motion.
Would be great, yeah. If you want to participate, creating the example API would be really cool to have support with this.
So in fact, so what I haven't really had the time yet, but I wanted to start actually deploying something that would implement the example API using code. So if Sebastian, if you would like to maybe look into deploying an open Rasta server that would expose the exact same API as we currently do from essentially the static JSONs.
Yeah, is that something that we could try and find some time to discuss and maybe hack some code on Saturday?
Definitely.
Then that's a deal.
Just I was wondering.
That's a date, depending.
So OpenRasta, so sorry for a segue. OpenRasta is open source, and all of its Hydra stuff also.
Yes, there's a Hydra plugin. So OpenRasta is a web framework for those of you that are not .NET people that has existed for 12 years now. It's a resource-oriented framework that has a resource model already. So what we've done is extend the resource model with as much information as we can, so we can generate currently the Hydra documentation and entry points statically because it's a static language. So yeah, it's all open source. It's on github.com/openrasta-core. And the Hydra plugin is in there. It's a bit of a mess because it was a first run, and there's a new version that we're working on.
No, that's okay, because the way I would like is to just create a repository which documents how you use OpenRasta to deploy the examples API so that everyone can look at it. If it were closed source, that wouldn't really make sense, right? So that's why I just wanted to make sure.
Yep. We can create a repo anywhere or just add to an existing repo and then we can commit the code. That's absolutely cool. It's all CI builds right now, so we'll have NuGet packages that are CI builds, but we can make it work easily. Yeah,
we can discuss this in person, I suppose. A separate repo, and then we would somehow link from the API examples readme somewhere, saying, okay, so that here are examples of this API in different languages. Hopefully, we can gather a few. So yeah, if you can start working on that, that will be awesome.
I will try, and I won't promise anything.
No, that's fine.
It's a could. It's a could. At least by Saturday, it's a could.
We're all busy.
Well, I mean, it could be that we just do the initial thing on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, crack some code, figure out if there are any bugs, and try to make it better. And with the existing code base, and then we'll evolve it over time.
Okay. And in the meantime, Angelo you wanted to do a cookbook of the operation. So
for the next thing I'm going to do is a cookbook about creating movies, and as soon as the cookbook is even with a API example, I will start working on listing movies.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous.
And action points from this?
Okay. I guess one action point that could for OpenRasta example and the cookbook for. Okay, got it.
Mm-hmm. Just to confirm, I understand correct, you want to deploy these cookbook examples from the movie API on this OpenRasta stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we could actually deploy that on AWS, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we'll put it somewhere on whatever. Your .NET Core, so we can do Heroku or a Docker image. That will be probably the easiest. And yep. And yeah, I because that's the ultimate goal to actually, you know, just use this API example as a blueprint for any existing and emerging real library server side implementations of Hydra, and it cuts both ways, because on one end, you try to implement your API and you see what the result should be. But then on the other hand, you may start implementing and then figure out that design is somehow flawed, or there are some missing pieces that you cannot really implement some features. So we need actually both, and we should strive to keep them updated to each other's state. But so yeah, yep. So it's mm-hmm. a stepping stone to start deploying actual dynamic APIs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, especially as there's always been the feedback from my 10 years of presenting on REST now that we sucked at providing client implementations as opposed to servers. So yeah.
Of course. So yeah. Very much so. So it's a triangular problem. We have the API blueprint, the API example. We can deploy it using OpenRasta and other libraries, and then we actually want to be consuming it. But for that, you're working on your code for .NET, and we have the two JavaScript implementations as well. So we can, we should. All of those efforts have to be in unison so that we have mutual feedback between all three sides.
Yeah, if you know of any good Go, Java, etc. developers, I think we should try to figure out if we can get other people excited about this. Maybe not as a first step, but I don't know if we have implementations, but
There is Python. The guys you may have mentioned on the HTTP API Slack, that is Lorenzo. He actually, I think he only joined once on the calls.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the Hydra ecosystem thing. And so that's, they have a Python server and they're doing some stuff through Google Summer of Code.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes.
They definitely have to get on board more. And you may know, I don't know how to pronounce that company, but you may know, what's his name? Douglas. Douglas. Is Peter? Not Peter. Kevin Douglas. So they are developing Symfony plugin, Hydra plugin for Symfony. And actually, they have this, what's it called? API. API platform, which allegedly implements Hydra, but no one's actually heard from them any feedback. So he was promising some feedback. So there are people doing stuff in different languages. We just need to somehow organize a joint effort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, the thing with the API platform, they provide this Hydra admin client, which actually relies on hard-coded assumptions on the JSON structure, which is not what I expected.
Yeah, I think unfortunately we do the same thing for performance reasons. We have very high loads to do, and having a whole JSON LD parser right now on .NET is, 10,000 transactions per second. It's starting to be a little bit more difficult to build. It's part of it is limitation of the platform. Part of it is a little bit more difficult. So, from an implementation detail, what we are doing right now is to just rely on the JSON structure. Unfortunately, our customers do that as well. So we need to figure out a way to make the two fit together. But the long-term plan is to try to figure out the context. And if the context looks like something the client does, then we just rely on the JSON structure. And then we go through the slow path of a JSON LD processor. When we don't, but that's a couple of months away. But that's the current plan because there are memory constraints and there are performance constraints. And .NET Core 3, we may be able to do a lot better. But frankly, Microsoft is in bed with OpenAPI to an extent where their will to support anything has vanished. Together with the NuGet project using JSON LD back then. But it's actually an interesting thing, right? NuGet.org, which is a package manager for .NET, was originally using JSON LD. Unfortunately, there are no developers assigned to NuGet anymore, according to internal information I got a long time ago. But there you go. I think most of my customers that build their own clients will always just rely on the JSON structure.
And that's how most APIs will be implemented in it. I mean, it's fine as long as you have your API in your client. Of course, the goal is for a bit more freedom in linking those APIs. But in the end, even if you rely on the structure, but it is a fully conforming JSON, fully conforming with Hydra, so that any client coming by chance can interact with it, that's already a win.
Yeah, correct. It's out of scope for this issue, but there is something about changes in cardinality that may be worth chatting about at some point. It's been an issue for us.
Okay. It looks like we have time today for the ordering again, which is good because Peter should actually be here, so maybe he can get activated. Otherwise, I suppose that's it for today.
Yeah.
Are we skipping the ordered collection thing?
Yeah, we've just reached our limit, so okay. It's up to you, honestly. If you have still some time to spend on this one, I'm okay with moving on.
No, I have to leave. But you can go on without me, but then someone has to take over scribing.
Well, we can push it to the next one. I don't have time.
It's up to you. We can have the last point of the agenda move to another call.
Or, I mean, we don't necessarily have to do it all on the calls. The calls are a convenient way to get up to speed with some tougher decisions. This one, I would really like to have Peter really participate some more. So he did ask last month how to participate, and then he disappeared again. So, I mean,
you just need to state some details about what he want to achieve at Citra, because it opens quite a can of worms.
Not necessarily, but I'm pretty sure that
no, it does.
All right. Well, Peter is from Ruben's team, so I'm pretty sure that they will have a very high standard for the open world thing, so that it may be a tougher discussion. So
I think ordering is somehow. I can see Michael Pickett joined us.
I think
I do agree. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay.
I think I agree that it's a kind of worms, because the ordering based on data and how it relates to RDF range is potentially
for instance
complex.
It touches the topic of querying, and I remember that we've decided on not to move on to this querying language. I don't know how to name it. So there are quite a few issues with even such a simple thing like ordering by string. What does it mean to sort something with a string property? What kind of comparison is involved?
Again, I think. To give my final opinion on this, I think the difficulty is, from a generic client perspective, I wonder if that's one of the areas where a separate additional spec that can be baked in a little bit later could work a little bit better, so that we take the more complicated stuff out of the main spec and just make it, you know, make it a separate issue and a separate extension.
Mm-hmm. Some kind of satellite spec or satellite feature for doing that in a bit more relaxed manner is an option if I understand you correctly.
Correct.
Yeah, I think we've discussed this kind of extensions multiple times in our history. Usually it was an idea of how we shall proceed with this querying. Probably it could handle the ordering and sorting as well. But still, I think we need to focus on the core to have it less draft and less unstable.
Agreed.
Okay, so I think I'll postpone this this point of the agenda to the next call. Maybe Peter will join us next time. Maybe I'll write some comment on this issue to get this stuff in motion.
Awesome.
Okay. All right, agreed.
Cool. Okay, so I think this is it. Unless any of you has anything else to say, I think we can call it a day and complete and finish this call.
Yeah, I just want to say again how excited I am about all this.
Cool, glad to hear that.
Yeah, hope to see you more often in the future.
Right. Indeed. For you, Sebastian and Angelo, if you need any support from me or maybe Tomasz, just don't hesitate to ask. If there is something in our clients that you would like to know or correct or anything,
of course,
just drop a mini mail on or create an issue or whatever.
Yeah.
Our time is limited, but.
Yeah. I will work further with the example API, and if anything is missing, mm-hmm. I will inform you. Tomasz did already fix several things on his client, and we improved the situation and could get something to see.
So I assume you are not using Heraclius, yes?
Not yet, but I gave it a try. Very cool that you published it to NPM. I was waiting for this several months. That's why I didn't use it in the past. I just came along with different approaches. But I will definitely involve Heraclius.js more often in the future. I'll give it a try and will let you know if anything is weird or missing.
Okay.
One very quick question. What's the difference between a Hydra and a Hydra CG channel?
So Hydra
on Slack.
Mm-hmm. On Slack. Yeah. Hydra was there before as a more, it's just Hydra stuff in general, and the CG is more organizational style, like when are the calls and then
reminders, pull requests.
But they come to the Hydra channel, but not the pull request notification. But we talk about the Hydra conf calls on Hydra.
Well, there's also the Hydra notifications channel. I don't know, maybe there's too many channels, but the notifications just seemed a little noisy on either channel. So that's why I created yet another one. So the CG was more of, you know, administrating the community group, and Hydra is more about the spec itself and libraries and stuff.
Okay. Okay, so should we try and move all the notifications and pinned post to the Hydra CG one?
I mean, we can. That's how it originally was. I'm fine either way.
Okay, I'll stop extending everybody's time, and I'm done.
Yeah. Okay, no worries. Okay, dudes. I think this is it.
All right. Thank you very much. See you next time. See you on Friday, Sebastian, and see you guys later.
Yeah. See you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.